All right. Welcome, 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 everyone, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone in between. This is Tony's Political Ramblings, episode 20. And so this is going to fall into the category of another episode that is a pitch, a policy pitch for me, sort of my two cents on a particular issue and an idea that I had. And so today we're going to take a look at the American South and why I believe that investing in the American South at the federal level will provide an opportunity for the South to revitalize itself and to rebuild itself into something better than it's ever been. And so why I feel like this is important is because overall, there are a lot of categories that Southern states tend to fall behind on in the union, in relative to other states in the union. Things like infrastructure quality, education, public services, healthcare, general health and well-being in general. And so to me, there's a real opportunity here to invest in the South, to make it, to build it back better, to use Biden's words. And so to me, this really begins in the Civil War. And really after the end of the Civil War. So just to set the scene here, you had the South and the Southern states that were just recently brought back into the Union. We'll just say this is like 1865, 66. Their entire economy that revolved around the slave trade had been completely upended. And again, they built an economic system that relied on a disgusting, hideous blot, to use the word of Thomas Jefferson, on the American society, and they built their economy around that horrible system, and so when it finally got upended, the entire economy was upended as well. And in addition to this, you had cities all over the South, cities like Richmond in Virginia, Vicksburg, and Atlanta, I want to say, who were all leveled, shaken to the ground. Because of the Union forces. They were fighting a war, after all. And so at the end of the war, the South, you have the recently freed black population trying to find their way in this new world, and you had an angry white population who was still, I know people to this day who still say the South shall rise again, who are angry at the North for completely upending their society and their economy and in their eyes infringing on their rights to own people, which is okay, strange, horrible sentiment, but at any rate, so this was only made worse over time, like things like the Jim Crow laws and a sort of refusal to invest in things like education to the same degree that other states were. And over time, the gap obviously has grown to where it is today, where, like I said at the beginning of this episode, the South has never really is never really anywhere close to a lot of other states in many categories, like I said, health and infrastructure, things like that. And so now you have, obviously, generally speaking, the two largest racial groups in the South are white people and black people. And so now you've come to this point, we'll just say, yeah, in the 1950s and 60s, where you have angry white voters who have been voting for Democrats consistently, pretty much even before the Civil War. And then you get to the Southern strategy that came around in the 1960s, 70s, like I was saying. Where it was basically a dog-whistled version of what we're hearing today in terms of racism and right-wing policies and things like that, where you sort of had a more subtle way of saying to these angry white voters that black people are the problem, they're the reason you're poor, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And this worked in a matter of 10-15 years, the South, which had reliably voted for Democrats, like I said, for decades, flipped. And to this day, they still vote for Republicans. And then again, it was built off of this this implicit racist implicitly racist Southern strategy that was put forward by candidates like Barry Goldwater and Richard Nixon, who eventually ended up winning the presidency. And to this day, you have white people in the South who feel like they've been left behind by the North and the West, and the West is the new one. And you feel like you have black people in the South who have always felt like they've been shafted and left behind from the start. And so my plan would be to invest federal money into these Southern states, specifically in things like workforce training, job training, loans for small business owners in the South, community centers, gyms and parks and things of that nature. Even, maybe even establishing more national parks out in the South. It's a beautiful part of the country, so I'm sure you could find something to make a park out of. And so what this would do is it would put money directly into the hands of local communities. Specifically, let's just look at the case of loans for small business owners. If you gave those loans to business owners in the South, if you gave them preferential treatment to, say, somebody in the North or something like that, they would be able to open their own businesses, they'd be able to make money that way, and then they would be able to invest in the things that that would make them more upwardly mobile, things like education, buying a nice house in a nice neighborhood, things of that nature. And so the key with this, though, is that the money would not go into things that are controlled by the state, because the state governments aren't exactly working in the best interest of working class white people and black people in the South. So this money would be put directly into the hands in job retraining, workforce development, like I said, small loans. So this way the money would go right into the hands of the communities, the counties, the individuals themselves. So that way you work around sort of the state level of government. So that way, that money can't get siphoned into different programs. And you could also offer things like tax breaks to companies who want to build buildings or manufacturing sites in cities in the South. You could incentivize people to move their businesses out there, like I said, through tax breaks. And then in terms of manufacturing, you could, Bill Gates has always suggested this, but you could tax the machines instead of taxing the workers, which would encourage people to hire more people instead of build more machines. So this is a way, again, where you can work around the state governments, which have historically not acted in the interest of working class people in the South, but you still provide that direct investment into people, into working class people in the South. So that way they can pick themselves up by the bootstraps, if you will, to use the American dream language. And so this would address two issues at once. Number one, you would just build up the South in general and make it a stronger force in the national arena and just the global arena in general, really. And number two, you would also be investing in black communities because obviously, as I mentioned before, the two largest racial groups that you get in the South are white people and black people, and the South is where you find the largest percentage, I want to say, of black people in the United States. So by investing in these communities directly, you are directly investing into black communities, and just as you are investing directly into disgruntled, disenfranchised, or not disenfranchised, but disillusioned white communities. And so you're building both of these up at the same time and hopefully integrating them along the way. So this plan to me, it represents a potential in the South and to take it to new heights that it's never been to before. This to me provides the opportunity for people in the South to integrate, to elevate, and to do it in a way that is undoubtedly Southern.